This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
The Guy Benson Show Sunday Replay. The week's most interesting interviews
with senators,
commentators, and newsmakers. Giving you a replay just in case you missed it. The Guy Benson Show.
Joining me now here in studio to talk about all of this and more is the man who will be hosting Special Report tonight, Brett Baier, of course, who's the anchor of that show and chief political anchor here at Fox News. And he also is a best-selling author, most recently, To Rescue the Constitution. Brett, it's great to see you here in person.
Hey, Guy. Good to see you.
Looking forward to TV tonight as well. So we just talked about the markets going a little crazy today, understandably. The economists were expecting something. Once again, that something was worse on inflation. What a nightmare for the Biden White House.
I think of all the things that they're worried about, you know, immigration as an issue, I think the inflation issue for the election is the most threatening. And the CPI, being as hot as it was, is essentially preventing what was promised or expected, these rate cuts that I just don't think are going to happen, looking at the picture right now. It could change, but the market's reacting to that. You know, President Biden said he's sticking by what he looks at and how great it is comparatively. But his numbers are a little shaded. They're not, you know, the inflation is worse since he took office. And people do feel it a lot more. And that has an impact on how they vote.
19.4% is the overall price increase on Joe Biden's watch across the board. You look at different sectors, some of them are a lot worse than that. And to your point, we just played a soundbite in the last hour. Another network had a focus group called the Undecideds, and it was only undecided voters, only from swing states. And the moderator, they're all on Zoom, on camera, he said, raise your hand if you think Donald Trump's economic policies would be better for your family than Joe Biden's. Unanimous hands go up. And now you get this inflation number. It's kind of the crux of it, because you look at the Gallup poll, Biden is seen as the more likable candidate by 20 points, but failing on all the policy and leadership questions. Then in this focus group, they're all talking about what a rotten bully Donald Trump is, but they all say his policies are better. Which one of those dynamics wins? That's like the $64 trillion question for November, I think.
I agree. And you throw into there the issue of abortion, which this week Democrats won. Across the board, they won. You know, the former president coming out saying it's an issue that should go to the states. And then the day next very day, Arizona going back to an 1864 law that outlaws all abortions.
Which he's now coming out against, and Carrie Lake is running away from it, and now it's going to be on the ballot. I mean, that's a significant development in Arizona.
Arizona, you've got the six-week ban that DeSantis, Governor DeSantis pushed in Florida, now also on the ballot. So these are big things. Now, for a voter who's going out there, what's more important? Is the abortion issue more important? Is the economy? Is immigration? All can be important, but it is a mover in some of these swing states, and it's going to be an issue.
One thing that may or may not be a mover, but something that just puzzles me to no end, is the president's habit, and it's not occasionally, it's all the time, of making things up about his life. His personal biography is a rich tapestry, much of which is just untrue. And we got another one. We do these regular installments where he's lying about his past. Here he was in Wisconsin this week. So he was out there to push the student loan forgiveness scheme, which I think is illegal and terrible policy. Setting that aside, he's got this crowd of young people there. And here's what he says in cut 15.
I, like an awful lot of people in this audience, was the first in my family to go to college, and
watched my dad struggle to help me get there. And
first in my family to go to college. Now, he said this back in the 80s after he plagiarized a speech from a British politician who had been the first in his family to go to college. Biden not only liked the speech and ripped it off, he liked the biography and ripped that off. He admitted that he was not the first in his family to go to college. He's, in fact, also bragged about his grandfather's college exploits in separate speeches. But why? When the bridge goes down in Baltimore, he says, I went across that bridge on a train all the time. No, he didn't. There were no train tracks. What is this about where it's almost pathological, where he makes things up about his background or some personal connection? There are fact checkers out there.
Not many, though.
That's a good point.
I mean, not many. They go, you know, by without being fact checked. I mean, if it was not for your show, for Fox overall, I don't think a lot of this would be picked up. It is a tick for him. And for some reason, when he gets in storytelling mode, he goes down that road. And it happens a lot. It's not just one, two, three times. There's about 10 different stories that if he goes down that cul-de-sac, he is going to be hitting a story that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it coming when he goes off the teleprompter and starts storytelling mode.
And the staff's like, no.
Don't do it. But he doesn't get called on it a lot, and obviously he doesn't get asked about it because nobody's getting those interviews. We continue to ask every week.
Univision got one, and he made some news there, and then I'm not sure if the news stuck. Because last night I saw transcript, I saw the quote from the president seeming to decouple the hostages in Gaza from this ceasefire request that he's making or demand. 6 to 8 weeks is what he's asking for. The hostages were not mentioned at all. So people were wondering, is this a new policy? I actually texted some Democratic friends on the Hill and elsewhere. Is this a new policy? And they were like, get back to us. We don't know. Because this could get walked back tomorrow. It could be a new level of pressure on Israel. We don't know. And then today, kind of a walk back with the Prime Minister of Japan, where the hostages were back into the discussion. Was that a trial balloon that got shot down yesterday from the president that didn't go over well? Did he not know what he was saying? It's like the options don't seem great here.
No. Either one of those is not a good thing, and a foreign policy thing that is very, very tricky. But the administration and the president are trying to have it always. They're trying to say that they are completely supportive of Israel and have Israel's back, but Israel has to stop doing things the way they're doing it, and we care, we're outraged by civilian casualties. I think, you know, I had General Keane on last night, and he said it is a major policy decision to do and say what the administration's doing and saying about Israel. And it does have ramifications. And I think that maybe some of that messaging had them walk some of that back today. I mean, clearly it was a different tone than he's taken over the last two times he's talked about it.
The other thing is, just from a political standpoint, because I know the conventional wisdom, and I think it's probably right, is they're worried about Michigan and some softness maybe in Minnesota and a few other places, so they are pandering as hard as possible to at least a Hamas-sympathetic group or a pro-Palestinian group or constituency, perhaps alienating a lot of other people in the process. But they haven't stopped calling him Genocide Joe. They haven't stopped disrupting his events. We had Death to America chants in Dearborn the other day. Is there any evidence that the placation efforts are placating? Because there's evidence that a lot of other people are saying, what the hell are they doing? And they're furious about it. Seems like the implacable people are still really mad at him.
That's exactly right. I don't think it's moving the needle on that side. And he's clearly making others very angry. If you don't talk about the American hostages all the time, I mean, we went weeks without even hearing the word hostages from policymakers. The onus should have been put on Hamas. End this. Release the hostages. Start there. And, you know, we'll work on Israel. But start there.
And the answer is, and as always has been, no. They just said no. Biden gave them the opportunity for a ceasefire with no hostage thing, and they said no to that. Sounds like a lot of the hostages, tragically, are dead.
Dead, right? 100%. Yeah, I don't think that there are many living, but we don't know. We have no exact information, but I think most Israeli officials we talk to say they believe they're dead.
Because, and you know this well, at least in the early days, Biden relatively, I thought, was pretty good on Israel and said the things that had to be said and was side by side with the Israeli position. And it's still, I think, the policy that Hamas should be destroyed. But it seems like the final step to actually doing that is Rafah. And everything we've heard, because they're leaking like crazy, they want everyone to know how much they're telling Israel not to finish Hamas and Rafah. So it's like, yes, Hamas should be gone, but don't do anything that would make them gone. What is Israel supposed to do with that?
Right. It's a no-win situation. And it has to get to a conclusion, but you can't do it by tiptoeing around the edges. The other thing that's a real question is if, as some intel authorities, both in the U.S. and Israel, believe that there is an imminent or semi-soon attack from Iran directly on Israel, not through Hezbollah, but from Iran, what is the administration's response to that, and how do they handle it? I mean, the escalation possibilities are real, but I don't think we've worked out where this administration is on that.
I don't think they have, because they draw kind of these red lines and say, don't do this, and then they'll kind of bomb a few facilities. The Houthis are still doing what they're doing. I don't understand if there is an actual attempt at deterrence here. Like, they'll say, don't. That didn't work out.
Yeah, it didn't.
I mean, exactly. And I mean, we're sitting here and it's, you know, it's funny to watch in some sense the incoherence, but it's also kind of scary because we are trying to figure out, as people who are fairly plugged in and follow this for a living, what the hell is the actual foreign policy of this president?
So imagine you're sitting in the Middle East as a leader of one of these other countries. And we're trying to figure it out. We're in Washington. We follow it all the time. Mm-hmm. What message is that sending to the Irans, to the Syrias, to the other countries?
And I think a lot of Trump supporters would make the case that having foreign leaders puzzling over this is actually a good thing. When Trump was president, he was kind of seen as unpredictable, so they were kind of worried about what he might do. I don't get the sense that the conversations are quite the same about the current occupant of the Oval Office.
No, there's not a fear. They have, I think they know which way they're going to lean on a lot of these decisions. With former President Trump, when he was president, there were embassies here in Washington that would really be seeking out journalists and others to just talk to see what the heck is going on in that building and in his mind.
I remember in 2016 and then early 2017, I took a trip overseas. I went to Hong Kong, which is where I grew up, and I got invited to speak. Karl Rove set it up, actually. And it was a group of Americans mostly, but a ton of Brits and Hong Kongers showed up at this speech. It's like, oh, here's a conservative from Fox. He can explain what just happened because Trump had just won. And they're like, so they're asking me all these very good questions about Trump. I'm like, beats me. I know I do my best.
Yeah, read Twitter.
Exactly. He could contradict anything I tell you in 6 seconds on Twitter at the time. So, but your point is well taken. And I think this is why there's an underlying anxiety among many voters who aren't necessarily chomping at the bit for more Trump, but see what's happening right now and saying we can't stick with this. And that comes back full circle to our conversation. A couple seemingly immovable objects heading in each other's direction for November, and voters will decide. Quickly, Brett, before I let you go, Capitol Hill, I can barely bring myself to follow this stupid drama with the speaker and the motion to vacate. We've seen this already. Is this real or is this all squawking? What's happening?
I think it is real. I think Speaker Johnson wants to get Ukraine funding, he's going to have to tap Democrats to do it. And once he does that, he opens himself up to attack. And are there the votes? Do they go down this road again to push out a speaker, not having a fill-in that can get the votes?
In an election year?
There's like, you have to see the end of the road, you know, and I don't think a lot of folks are, but they are making their stand on principle, and we'll see where it goes.
On principle, they say. Fair enough. We'll see where it goes. We'll be following it. At some point, I'll follow it, I guess, if it starts to get more real. Brett says it's real, so you got to pay attention.
Yeah, it's real.
Brett Baier, anchor of Special Report. I'll be on tonight on the panel. Looking forward to that. Brett, thanks for stopping by.
See you.
That was this week's edition of the Guy Benson Show Sunday Replay. For more Guy Benson Show, go to GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.